And next up on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's the March 7th, 2019 edition of our favorite show, or at least I hope it's one of your favorite shows, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. That's a long show with me doing a lot of introducing of interviews and topics all around civil rights on the street for the broader community, but particularly for homeless folks and poor folks. But today's spoken version of this, rather than, let's say, the previously recorded version, although all of this is being previously recorded in a couple hours before the 6 o'clock airing time, because we don't have a studio still, and we don't even have a transmitter site. We're kind of a barren remnants of a radio station, but we're still struggling along. Today is particularly difficult for me because I'm sick still. I got a God knows what, some kind of virus or cold. It's been hanging on for a month now. And it saps my energy. So I'm going to do what I can and give you a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a lot of recorded material without a lot of breaks for commentary, which I kind of regret because I think the commentary is important. And I'm also told, at least by the few who do listen to the show, that it's of interest to them. So bear with me anyway. Let's jump in and swim.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Yes, and so on top of all these ongoing concerns that we bring to your attention periodically on the show, which is we're looking for a studio 10 by 10 with electricity access and internet access, bathroom access somewhere, and we're willing to pay $300 as a reward if you can find it for us for a year or any part of a year, you'll get part of the $300. We're also looking for the transmitter site, a place where we can put up an antenna. It doesn't have to be inside, outside, it can be on a tree, and it's a pretty low risk, although we are technically a pirate station, and you'd learn about the risks if you get in touch with us, which you can do by going through the website, freakradio.org, where you'll also find other things there, like some people's archives and how to apply if you want to be a member. Or you can contact me at 423-4833. I'm not any official rep of the station, but I'm a member of the collective, and I can pass stuff on if you want to join the collective, if you want to help the collective, contribute to it in any way, if you have questions, or if you have any criticisms of my show or commendations or stuff you want to hear on the air or talk about on the air that you don't think are being discussed that sort of are in my general area of homeless civil rights and sort of civil liberties for folks in Santa Cruz, very locally oriented, though a lot of the national ordinances, I should say laws, passed by the Congress or enacted by federal agencies and state agencies have an impact on us locally. So that's true, too. Number is 423-4833, and then it's in area code 831. So a couple things are coming up tomorrow. In Salinas, between, well, starting at 3, I'm reading on Indie Bay that there is a protest about the killing, some say the murder, of Brenda Rodriguez Mendoza. Three officers apparently are involved in that murder, according to the folks throwing the protest, Brian McKinley, Carlo Culapad, it looks like, and Robert Miller. Those, I suspect, are Salinas law enforcement agents of one sort or another. It's all going to be held at Cluster, C-L-O-S-T-E-R, Cluster. Looks like Cluster Park, 401 Tout, T-O-W-T Street in Salinas, for all of you Salinas listeners, of whom perhaps there are one or two at least, or people who want to go to Salinas tomorrow, 3 o'clock, to protest police murders or shootings or inappropriate use of lethal force, whatever you want to say. Then that evening here in Santa Cruz, we have a memorial to Sherry Connable. Sherry Connable, some of you listeners may know regularly, was an activist on a number of fronts, peace activist, a homeless activist, an activist against police abuse. I knew her personally through her work with and to some extent against, in my view, some of the interests of homeless folks. But she was, she felt very strongly about it. She put much more energy into it than your average person and even than your average activist, I would say. She spoke eloquently. She was a good organizer. I've talked about her death a bit, about her death. I don't know anything about her death. She was found on the beach and there was some concern as to whether she committed suicide or not. Different accounts. I don't know. Can give you no further information on that. I spoke about my own personal involvement with her as a homeless activist, which mostly was decades ago, and mostly it was from a critical perspective. And I'm often told and sometimes feel weighted down by traditional concerns that when someone dies, you don't want to dredge up the bad stuff. You want to remember the good stuff. Well, I try to remember all of it, particularly since the purpose of the show is to deal with the bad stuff and to encourage people who are working on the good stuff to work harder, longer, and deeper on it. And if folks have been doing bad stuff, I bring that up too. But I've talked about Sherry a bit in the past. I'm actually going to try to find some old recordings I have of hers. I don't think I'll be able to. I was actually originally inspired by her speech in the spring of 1989, way back when for a year many of us have been organizing, going to jail, getting arrested, sleeping out, speaking at city council, getting people to come in significant numbers who are homeless to city council to demand an end to the sleeping ban, the law that's still on the books in Santa Cruz, municipal code 6.36010, now supposedly not enforced by Chief Mills, but of course enforcement is happening around other ordinances, such as being in a park after dark, being in a closed area, blocking the sidewalk. I continue to repeat this every show because I haven't heard that it's been discontinued, although Chief Mills has said it's discontinued. And I've recently sent for police records to find out just how much recently has been the case as far as ordinances, citations issued and stay-away orders issued by either the police department or the Parks and Rec Rangers, the most of whom are under Mills' jurisdiction these days, or so I understand it, as of the reorganization of the police department a year ago. His memorial is going to be at the Peace United Church at 900 High Street, Friday night. That's tomorrow night, March 8th at 7 o'clock, for all of you who want to go. You can also go online and you can see a story and a series of photos by Alex DeRosi celebrating Sherry's life. Available on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And you'll see photos of her singing with the Raging Grannies, standing with her Peace Dove sign on Ocean Street, standing with many of us to demand that Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, be freed. Opposing the Bearcat, that was the organization SCRAM, Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarism, I think, something like that. That was the organization she banned Huff, that's from our group, from joining. I was never quite clear why, but she did. A lot of photos of her. On July 4th, there was usually a rally on Ocean Street where people would stand. They used to stand in the median until the city made it a crime to stand in the median. I still did, but I was chided by some of the more, shall we say, more nervous peace activists. This would somehow alienate the city authorities and the city police. Sherry did not chide me, as far as I remember. There's another photo of a circle supporting Linda LeMaster. That's Lighthouse Linda, longtime homeless activist, mom, often a homeless person herself, who was trying to take care of one of the Peace Camp 2010 activists, curb hugger Chris Doyen, who later became Commander X, for those of you who remember those days, who has since written two books, by the way, for all of you who are interested, some of which mention Santa Cruz. And there was Linda was found guilty of the now in question ordinance because of the Boise versus Martin decision, the 647E ordinance, unlawful occupancy. And it's a misdemeanor crime that Linda was found guilty of because she was sitting on the steps of the courthouse with a sign trying to take care of someone who was ill at 3 in the morning during that Peace Camp 2010 protest back in 2010. And then she went to court, spent a year struggling with court. A lot of people are in that picture. I'm probably around there somewhere, but I don't see myself. A lot of photos by Alex DeRosi, who's a great photographer and chronicler of the civil rights movement in Santa Cruz, that which we had of the civil rights movement. There's also pictures of her supporting the Santa Cruz 11, of which I was one, so she did support us, although I don't think she would necessarily have come to support me, but she would have. There were other people involved, and she understood the principles involved and came to support all of us at that time. So there's a lot of photos. I suggest if you want to remember her, this will give you some reflections, some memories. She was fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline. I think it was a solidarity protest here with that. And it's quite a collection of photos. You have her conferring with a police officer, opposing drone warfare in a protest on Pacific Avenue. And I will reserve my critical comments at this particular point. I perhaps should know better, but I have limited time, energy, and space. Here's a protest against the war on Syria, which is, of course, the war in Yemen is now going on, and Somalia and Afghanistan and Iraq is still going on and is being supported by the Democratic Party, which I don't think Sherry was a big fan of. She and I shared that antipathy, I believe. Although she was a very practical politician in many ways. And I think that's one of the reasons that we had some friction. She was also in the vigil for Sean Smith Arlt, the man the Santa Cruz police murdered, or shot, depending on how you want to view it. And we're still looking for those records for Arlt, to find out all the witnesses actually said. Those are the police records. They should be available now. And I think, I'm not sure if I put in a Public Records Act request. If I haven't, I certainly intend to, if that intention ever bears fruit. A Sherry Memorial coming up tomorrow, March 8th, 7 o'clock, Peace United at 900 High Street. And on Saturday, from 1 to 4, it is International Women's Day, or if it isn't, it's the day that some Santa Cruzans are celebrating International Women's Day. And in a certain sense, perhaps every day is or should be International Women's Day until they and other groups of people who have been historically and currently discriminated against for something they have no control over whatsoever, to wit, their gender, until that's ended. Anyway, what it says on the indie media is, all the soup and bread you can eat for $7. So it's not for the poor, but I guess it's, you might be able to codge some soup and bread if you go. That's going to be at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which is on Ocean Street across from the Paradox Hotel. I think it's 610 or something like that, or 612. If you get to that general location, you should find the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and that's, again, on Saturday, March 9th, from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. I didn't make the Conscience in Action and Huff meetings yesterday because I was a combination of both ill but also out of town. I had to go see doctors up north, And also I picked up some Street Spirits. So there is the February issue of Street Spirit, which I should have gotten weeks ago but didn't. And the March issue will now be available either, hopefully, in the library, the main downtown public library, where you can find back issues of the Street Spirit newspaper. Or you can get it from me if you ever find me on the streets again or in my car, which is a distinctive-looking vehicle with lots of bumper stickers all over it. There are a few of those around, but if you see one with a lot of bumper stickers, take a closer look and see if it's if it has the word fuck on it or has stuff critical of imperialism and the police. It's likely to be mine. I think that there may be some other folks with similar bumper stickers, but these cover the station wagon. It's a Volvo. And I'd be happy to give you some Street Spirits, particularly if you're outdoors or poor and likely to be soon outdoors. You can sell it. I can get $2 a piece for it. Keep all the money. Don't have to pass any of it back to us in any kind of Scientology pyramid scams of anything of that sort. You'll also be able to find issues of it at the Sub Rosa Cafe where we meet. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meets every Wednesday at 11. Actually, it's been getting closer to noon these days since we share the time with our sort of sister group, Conscience and Action, which is a group concerned with not just making speeches at City Council, which both of the groups do, and we should be at the next Tuesday City Council meeting likely doing that. That's going to be next Tuesday. I haven't seen the agenda yet, and I don't think it's out, though I'll take another look before I end this section of the broadcast. Street Spirit is a newspaper that in the past has had articles by local Santa Cruzans like Steve Plaich, Linda LeMaster. I even used to write for it, and still, well, you can find a lot of my old articles. Street Spirit's also archived on the Huff website, as well as on its own website, The Street Spirit. You go, if you want to go further back and actually read Santa Cruz homeless history, you should go to the HuffSantaCruz.org website and look for The Street Spirit and The Street Shit Sheet Archives. Those are the two publications that cover a lot of the history of the Santa Cruz homeless struggle from my perspective. As well as, if you want more recent stuff, you can actually go to the Huff blog, which is on the Huff website, and you can actually read recent last 4 or 5 years, actually the last 10 years, of information from the perspective of Huff activists, mostly from my perspective, but from other people's perspective as well. It looks like the City Council agenda, as of about 10 to 5 on Thursday, has not been posted. Usually it doesn't get posted until later on Thursday or Friday. Then you can see what the mayor has in store for you, the mayor and the city manager. That's Mayor Martine Watkins and City Manager Martine Bernal, no relation, in spite of the same first name. And I've been critical of a lot of their shenanigans around excluding from the agenda, or I should say warping the agenda to their own priorities and ideology, in spite of the council majority of 4 wanting to put another slant on homeless issues and having to kind of force it through going to the city council meetings themselves and then trying to set the agenda for the next meeting instead of being able to do so cooperatively with the mayor and the city manager, which should be the way it's done. Although it has been suggested also by some activists, notably Micah Posner, that the agenda be set in a public meeting. I think that's a great idea. That is to say, the public should be invited to at least attend and witness, if not participate, in the formation of the city council agenda. That could be done as at a sort of a pre-meeting meeting once a week before every city council meeting. And it would be a real a form of democratic process that would actually be democratic instead of simply pretending to be democratic and actually leaving the decisions to a select group of people, some of whom are elected by heavy political spending. And it's essentially an oligarchy, a wealth council, or a council that gets in because it has the backing of those who are well-to-do. I have a meeting with the mayor slated for tomorrow for free radio, but I'm probably going to have to cancel it. Although I'm able, as you can hear, to talk somewhat, I tend to go hoarse pretty quickly. And I really want to be in pretty good shape when I'm interviewing Martine, because I've got hard questions, which I follow up on, and I want to be able to do so, A, effectively, and B, without giving her a virus, which is what I've got. It looks like something like that. Although some would say, well, I'd give her a virus, for heaven's sakes. I would say, no, that's not playing the game. Not that we should be playing a lot of games here, but I don't want anyone to get sick because this is a long thing I've had. It's been for at least a month, and it doesn't go away, and it's peculiar. I don't like it at all. And anyway, the issues that the Conscience in Action group has been getting into have been, the main three issues have been the Ross camp, making sure it doesn't close without there being really some meaningful alternatives, and also protecting the rights of the majority of people who are homeless who are not in the Ross camp, and make sure that they're free of police harassment when they try to shelter themselves at night, wherever they are in Santa Cruz, provided they're not, you know, violating somebody else's private property rights, which we know are incredibly sacred. Or disturbing some public health and safety concern that is a legitimate rather than, psychiatric concern to bigots who need really to learn to deal with different kinds of people in their general spaces but don't want to do that, or who like to pin crimes on homeless people, essentially tar a whole group for what is the behavior of a few folks, just as they wouldn't want to be tarred as housed people, because there are some thieves, even killers, even, you know, genocidal people who are in high political office who live inside houses. So it's really a housed problem. How are we going to solve that housed problem, for heaven's sakes? Case, another issue has been bathrooms and the closing of bathrooms all over the city, the fencing off of public spaces like the Loudoun Nelson Center, the closing off of spaces all along the riverbanks, at City Hall, in front of the library, at the police station. This attempt to exclude and fence off the city in order to eliminate homeless people and make it more difficult for them to find any place to rest, which is, of course, now running up directly against the Boise v. Martin decision, I think, if we ever get attorneys who have enough interest in taking the case, or if the work by Anthony Prince and his statewide California Homeless Union, I should say Wes White, too, and some of us Huffsters, ever gets anywhere, because the right to rest, which some state authorities, some state legislators tried to put into a state code 6 years ago and didn't make it, I'm going to suggest we try to put into a city code after we eliminate a lot of this nonsense that has been kind of toxic bigotry that's been institutionalized into law over the last 30 years, ranging from don't sit next to a building, to don't sit on a bench for more than an hour, to don't cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. There's a whole series of ordinances that need to be examined and probably discarded for their disproportionate impact on homeless folks in terms of their being selectively enforced by police for that purpose. That's part of Drew Glover's attempt and actually instructions to the staff to research those issues, something that's due back in 90 days. I spoke with him today to get some idea of what's coming up, and I was urging him to not back down from the kind of nonsense he's getting from the old Cynthia Matthews guard, who was framing his objections to the abusive treatment that the new council majority is getting from Martine Watkins. She's claiming it's a form of bullying and sexism on his part, which I think is a false flag, as they like to say in the business. As I say, bathrooms has been an issue, and that was sidelined by the ever, it's not fair to say ass-licking, is it? Still, it appears to me someone who is more concerned with the priorities of the city manager's agenda, which has to do with pleasing the well-to-do in the neighborhoods and attending to police department priorities, than with dealing with the issues of the broader citizenry, to say nothing of the homeless community. And so the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms were closed at the it's hard to say, was it at the initiative or simply, certainly with the cooperation and certainly over no objection from Izeth Ray, who runs the Loudon Nelson Center, under Carol Skurich, when she was temporary head of Parks and Rec. It's now run by Tony Elliott, but Skurich may still be the woman to talk to in terms of getting anything changed. Though Elliot assures me we can chat about it, and we'll chat and chat. We've been chatting for months about it. Chitter chatter doesn't seem to have lots of impact on Tony, though he's a personable fellow, no question about it. There was a letter written by one of the activists, Ursula, who you may remember, you've heard her on the air before. She's an older woman who was severely embarrassed and upset, understandably, by an incident where a business, Ross, of all people, the same people that's pushed to put up the fence around the parking lot, has security guards roaming the area, harassing people, bringing water into the Ross camp. I don't know if it's simply Ross, or even if Ross is specifically engaged in it, but I would make the guess that their fingers are in this somewhere. In any case, Ursula is concerned about having some open bathrooms, and she's been involved in protests, as have many of us with Conscience in Action, at the Loudon Nelson Center, in front of Parks and Rec's offices, in front of the city manager's office. We met with the city manager. We've been able to get the San Lorenzo bathrooms open after they were closed for a year, though I'm not sure where they're at now. But we haven't been able to get 24-hour bathrooms other than the three porta-potties that are available downtown, and then the line of porta-potties that's available out at Ross. Not the most convenient thing for homeless people throughout the city, for sure, or for that matter, for late-night tourists or people who are just passing through. So her question was sent to activist Micah Posner, who was on the city council for 4 years, and got a lot of flack for me for what he didn't do and some of the things he did do and some commendation for some of the things he did do, like with Pamela Comstock. Talk about doing deals with the devil. Opening a 24-hour porta-potty, what I call the Posner poo-poo machine or the Posner porta-potty, at the corner of Front and Laurel Streets. But not opening the bathrooms, which he also was able with her to actually open the bathrooms. Yeah, let me clarify that. He was the one who got the porta potty there, but then he and Comstock were able to get the parking garage bathroom across from New Leaf Market, the Front Street garage, opened one of the Front Street garages. Front Street has a couple of them. So good for him on that. She wrote him to ask who originally decided to close the bathrooms and what's going on there. This is one of the things that Drew Glover was concerned about in his resolution, essentially getting the city council to reopen the bathrooms that are closed and also establish a procedure by which the city parks and rec boss, Tony Elliott, or in the old days, Mauro Garcia, or before that, Dennett Shoemaker, could just arbitrarily, with a snap of her fingers, close the stuff without even really consulting with even the Parks and Rec Commission. Although I think she has to advise them it's happening, but there's no control over her. Similar to the city manager, who has no control, really, except in theory from the city council. But once the city council, will it ever get the ovaries or the balls to fire this guy? All they need to do is put the resolution on the agenda and pass it with 4 votes. And they have 4 votes. So if you're wondering what's happening, so am I. Anyway, the letter from Ursula to Micah Posner about the issue of the bathrooms reads as follows. Actually, she just sent him a very quick email. And what he said was, if I can find the damn thing, I would like to know who proposed the idea and voted to make it policy, the closing of the Loudon Nelson bathrooms. At which point, Posner responded, according to city ordinance, the parks director has the right to open and close city facilities. I doubt this was drafted with politics in mind. The charter is much older than the beginnings of policies that marginalize and harass homeless people. I believe that the new parks director is closing facilities in close consultation with the city manager, or in the case of the Loudon Nelson bathroom, keeping them closed. They've been closed since February of last year. And by closed, I mean they are locked under a key that is only available to those who are at the Loudon Nelson Center, supposedly using a particular program. And people who have actually been using the programs have been denied access at different points. If you ask the staff, they don't all agree with this, although you'll get ambivalent answers from people like Skidmark Bob Duran, who talks about vandalism in the bathrooms. When you examine that excuse and look for the actual specifics of the vandalism, how many times it's happened, how much expense it's caused, you find it relatively a small number of times, two or three times a year, maybe less, actually, I think, in 2017, the year, or 2018, the year before it was closed. No, 2017. And anyway, the letter continues. The better fix, Micah Posner writes, is for the city council to control when parks are open. Given the closures are now being done as a way to attempt to control parts of the population and not just for maintenance, this would be more in keeping with the city's charter. I wrote an ordinance to this effect. Sandy Brown and Drew Glover are strongly in support and have agreed to bring it to the council in the next few months. I believe that Crone and Cummings also supported. I've attached it for your review. And indeed, many of us sat down at the table with Drew Glover and tried to have this ordinance put together along with six or seven others. And they were all sidelined several times. Finally, two of them got put on the agenda, the homeless emergency and the Delaware parking, which was apparently only a part of it was put on the ordinance, and that resulted in a panic among the Delaware people, Delaware Street residents, or those who are in the general area, or possibly group mobilized by those who just hate the idea of homeless people being able to park their RVs or vehicles anywhere in Santa Cruz. And there are quite a number of those, at least in an active minority. I call them the Take Back Santa Cruz trolls, but they're predated by downtown neighbors, Santa Cruz neighbors, the police department, the staff, the downtown association, and so forth. In the meantime, Micah Posner continues in his letter back to Ursula, the parks director could simply open the bathrooms and get rid of the damn fascist fence in San Lorenzo Park, or the city manager could ask him to do it, or they could check in with four council members and then do it instead of waiting to be publicly directed to do so. So it doesn't even require council action. All it does is requires four council members, I mean, really probably will require four council members to do it, because the city manager and the head of Parks and Rec are not so inclined. But good for you, Ursula, for pursuing this, and good for you, Micah, for clarifying your thoughts on this and speaking out, my, using the F word, fascist, and goodness gracious. Let's not get extreme. And now it's time for a famed musical break, and perhaps to everyone's delight, although we'll see. I haven't heard this song. It's going to be the first time I've heard it. It's another one from Randy Rainbow.
I'm here now with the latest cast-off from The Bachelor Hanoi, fresh off his second meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. I don't see a rose. Does that mean no denuclearization?
We didn't sign anything today. It didn't quite work out.
Did you guys do it?
I just don't think maybe either of us were ready.
So does that mean we can expect a third date?
We'll see what happens. Again, the relationship is very good. He likes me. I like him. Some people say, oh, you shouldn't like him. I said, why shouldn't I like him?
Maybe because he's a deranged dictator who starves his people and executes members of his own family. But, you know, we all have... My boyfriend doesn't put down the toilet seat, so... Men.
Well, no, I just think he's... First of all, he's a character.
What's your response to critics who accuse you of consistently siding with foreign adversaries over your own intelligence officials?
Why shouldn't I like him? I like him. Get along great.
Uh-huh. And what do you say to those who worry that your naivete and reckless behavior are jeopardizing national security and putting us all in grave danger?
We'll see what happens. Again, the relationship is very good.
You would think he'd obey when his own intel agencies tell him to watch out for Putin and Kim.
He's a real personality, and he's very smart. He's sharp as you can be, and he's a real leader.
But he's too egocentric to do what those men think is best for the country instead of for him.
He likes me, I like him.
Some people say, oh, you shouldn't like him. I said, why shouldn't I like him?
Yet he's as obedient as a tiny pup. For any louse on a nuclear list.
Look, bottom line, I think he wants to get something done.
'Cause when his own daddy issues start flaring up, there's not a psychopath he can resist.
He's sharp as he can be, and he's a real leader.
So unabashedly he reveals.
And he's very smart.
Those sad, lovely feelings he feels. He gets horny for absolute power. Treacherous goons put a gleam in his eye. His taste in men stinks. Now he says that he thinks he's in love and we're all gonna die. Goes mad for a mad crazy tyrant who rapes and pillages, murders and lies. Merely faux pas he lets slide just because he's in love with these wonderful guys. Of a snitch under oath on a witch hunt or anyone who disagrees. He's a hater but ruthless dictator, sure make him go weak in the knees. He goes cuckoo for criminals. What they're all selling, he's eager to buy. And while they play him, he's happy to say he's in love, 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 and we're all gonna die.
And then we fell in love.
Okay?
No, really. He wrote me beautiful letters. And they're great letters.
Sure, it seems treason-y, but can't you see he's in love with a wonderful guy? He's so thirsty for thugs and delinquents. There's not a Nazi he can't justify. And he could cream from an evil regime.
Sorry, kids.
But we're all gonna die.
Just kidding.
He gets misty for misogynists. He gives dirtbags the credit they're due. At a summit, he plays it so dumb. It's no wonder they all love him too. He gets boners for bloodthirsty monsters. He'll take their side every time they deny. Though he's appalled when it comes to a Baldwin. He loves autocratic, tyrannical, lying, oppressive, despotic, inhuman, plain, awful, maniacal, vicious, sadistic, and vengeful.
Me, I like him.
Great.
And that was Randy Rainbow. He's in love, and we're all gonna die. Just a couple comments. Rainbow's touching packing with Democratic Party hacks who have now decided the FBI and the CIA are the best source because they're against Trump as well is really an unwise choice, in my view. We're not in real danger. The idea of a deal with North Korea and a peace treaty with South Korea is a good idea, not a bad idea, though not a likely situation, considering Trump's general hawkish constituency. He's a showman. He does what he does in order to distract from what he doesn't want seen and to garner support with his constituency. So, you know, but using that, however, understanding that you don't want to attack and become a warmonger against Russia and peace activity across the globe because Trump happens to be talking that way or seems to be making motions in that direction. That's a bad idea, particularly even more so to put your faith in the CIA and the FBI. That's my view. Anyway, coming up next, we have a relatively long segment of Anthony Prince's presentation to Roskamp sympathizers, Roskamp residents, homeless activists in a meeting that happened yesterday. This is going to be the first part, and I'll be playing more, I think, on Sunday. It's going to break off rather abruptly, so be prepared for that. And if you want more of it, check in at 9:30 on Sunday on this same computer dial at freakradio.org. I don't think we're going to have any transmitting happening yet by that time. I'd love to be proved wrong. Again, if you have any tips on where to find a studio space or a transmitter site, you want to offer anything, any ideas, give me a call, 423-4833. If you have any comments on the show that you want to pass on, memorials for Sherry Connable or anybody else who's died. A couple of homeless guys have died, three actually, recently in the last few months. Let me know. 423-4833. And I'll be talking at you again on Sunday.